Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the War Room. We got Dev, Kill, Jimmy, PJ, and B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
Give it to you how you want it in the 1 or 2 hour show.
Everybody, happy Thanksgiving to all you sports fans out there and to the rest of you people as well. Welcome back to another holiday edition of your favorite show. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you, of course, by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm joined by my partner, Jimmy the Blueprint Williams, one of the hardest working brothers in the sports industry. We hope y'all are having a great turkey day and with your family, and we like to continue it with a great show for you. So let's get right to it. But before we do, make sure you join us right now in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to get into the conversations. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline in about 30 minutes. That number is 323-410-0012. We also need you guys to make sure you check out our partners during the week. That's Roy and Chris on the Broad Street line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. And check the listings for our homies Brandon and Daniel on Sports Track Radio, which is now on the iHeartRadio network. But don't worry, if you can't catch these guys live, you can hear and watch these guys and all of our other partner podcasts and webcasts at War Room Sports. blogspot.com. And in addition, don't forget to catch your boys, that's us, in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newvibradio.com, 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. Blueprint, what's up, man?
How's turkey day
been for you so far, man?
Oh, man, listen, man, I'm half asleep now, but I'm still here, good brother. You know what I mean? It's probably the best holiday during the course of the entire year. You know, yeah. Even though we're celebrating terrorism, it doesn't matter because it's time for us to get together as family. You know, let's not talk about the history, but you know, we still get together with family and break bread, so it's always good.
Yeah, we can talk about what we're thankful for. Like you said, the actual day that we're celebrating. I don't know. You know, it might be a little shameful in the eyes of people who really sit down deep and think about it, but you know, how society is. We make things into our own, and we make it about what we want to make it about. You know, rabbits and Santa Clauses and trees and you know, we do what we want with the holidays. But
this is America. That's what you do in America.
Yeah, definitely. We want to give a shout out too to our alma mater, Central High School. Shout out to those Lancers for defeating Northeast High in the annual Turkey Day football game up in Philly. So those guys, you know, we don't win that much, so we got to make a big deal out of it when we do. Plus, you know, some of their coaching staff. Yeah, exactly. Some of their coaching staff are guys that, you know, we know from back in the day. That's how old we are now. Dudes used to play in the game. Now they're coaching the game. But some of Northeast's coaching staff, you know, was talking trash to me this morning. So, you know, I gotta reciprocate that because I haven't cared about this game. Like, you know, I didn't care about this game when we were in high school. So
this is absolutely true, man. But think about this, though. Think about, like, in terms of professional sports and the guys we grew up watching and how, like, literally their kids are in the league now.
Yeah, yeah. Feeling a little bit
crazy.
Old about that. But
crazy.
It's all good. It's all good. All right, man. So, yeah, we hope everybody out there is having a great time with their family. If you're listening to the show, if you're listening from your computer or in the car or, you know, on your phone, wherever you're listening from, turn it up and let everybody hear it. You know, don't be selfish. Don't be stingy. Because maybe they might want to listen again next week if they like what they hear. So let's talk about what's been happening this week, Jim, while everybody has been on that grind. I guess it's been a short week of grind since we got the holiday, but While y'all were on the grind, of course, is brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, including that NFL Sunday ticket, which you can get at a special rate right now since the season is more than half over, go to our website, warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, and order yourself a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. If you call yourself a sports fan, then you got to have DirecTV. All right, something that we talked about and posted on our Facebook page actually earlier in the week, Adrian Broner, on his Instagram profile, he posted a photo of some what is James called again?
Prosthetic legs is what you,
I couldn't think of the word prosthetic. He posted a photo of some prosthetic legs and basically said these are the new Derrick Rose fives, who's going to get some. So a lot of people on Instagram, you know, flipped on their heads and was killing Adrian Broner. Same with the people we posted it for in our on our Facebook page. What did you think? You think it was fair, foul, all in good fun? What did you think about that post?
All right, here's the thing, man. First off, everybody knows that Instagram is full of clowns. This is where people, you know, go to play around. By the way, at JW Blueprint on Instagram. And ladies, don't flirt with me because I don't flirt with ladies on Instagram. But anyway,
at War Room Sports on Instagram.
That's
as well.
Right, the company's at War Room Sports. But the thing is, these kind of jokes were floating around, but it only made news because Adrian Broner is a top flight athlete, and to see one athlete, you know, send a shot at another is kind of crazy. But here's the at the end of the day, eventually Broner will lose because it happens to every boxer. The only boxer we haven't seen, you know, really have a defeat like that is Floyd. So, you know, chances are he'll have a defeat where he'll get knocked down and lose a fight, and there will be something to float back around. So I think it's all in good fun, you know. But he has to expect it. When it comes back, you got to deal with it because everybody sends shots at everybody. That's the world we live in.
Yeah. I mean, it usually doesn't come from other athletes. So I see, you know, how people would think that. But I'm going to be perfectly honest. When you first showed it to me at first glance and I read the caption, I laughed out loud, literally. Everybody talk about some LOL. LOL for real. It was funny. You know what I'm saying? And then you think about it, like, oh, that's kind of messed up. But at the same time, you know, the dude was having fun. And I'm nobody, you know, I don't take up for Adrian Broner. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're talking about how he'll lose and then all the memes will be on him and all that kind of stuff. I wait for that day. I want Adrian Broner to get his boot stretched, if only for the fact that he's flashing all his money and his mom lives in a house that looks like it's in the middle of Beirut. Like, I want dude to get his boot stretched mainly because of that. But he's a clown. He's a fake wannabe Floyd. You know, he wants to do everything Floyd does out of the ring, but you haven't put that time in. You know what I'm saying? You don't work as hard as this man
inside
of him.
I mean, he's
a good fighter.
This is a thing where he already realizes that it's all about entertaining people. So he's going to entertain and do what he has to do to stay relevant. I mean, he's also the guy that posted on Instagram a picture of him and two women who were giving him fellatio in the picture. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the kind of stuff that he does. But it keeps his name in the media. It keeps him relevant. And, I mean, that's just the kind of guy he is. But everything will flip back on him eventually. But at the end of the day,
he also took his last opponent's girl and brought her to the fight with him.
Somebody said that on our page. I'm not sure who it was, so forgive me for not mentioning your name. But they said this is also the guy who went out of his way to start messing with his last opponent's ex-girlfriend and bring her to the actual fight. Like, so he's an entertainer, man. Like, you know, some guys are athletes and some guys are entertainers. That's just what it is.
He's definitely stepped the fine line, you know, from entertainer to coon. But this is the kind of stuff that'll work because, I mean, it's there with Floyd now, too, because Floyd, he has always put in the hard work and dedication, no pun intended, to make him who he is now. But like Jimmy always points out, when he was just doing that and he was just pretty boy Floyd and he was just stacking them up and knocking them down, nobody cared. But when Floyd started to, you know, shuck and jive a little bit and bring attention to himself, he became the biggest figure in boxing, you know,
it's kind of the consumer's fault.
De La Hoya's prime. Right. This is what we like as consumers. So he's going to do the same thing. Just like I said, I want to see him get his boot stretched. There are so many people, once this guy starts demanding pay-per-view dollars and everything, there's so many people who are going to pay for these fights just to see him lose. It's going to be to his benefit financially, and it seems like, you know, that's his priority right now. You know, and you can't really.
So basically, what you're saying, what you're saying is the way the system is set up and the way society and culture is, we have now have a culture where it's in your benefit to coon.
Yeah, cooning is good.
Okay.
Shucking is
coon
good.
Coon is good.
Jiving is the name, truth.
In this episode, we're gonna rename this episode. Cooning is good.
Cooning is good. Yeah. So we'll see. Like, so all the attention he brings upon himself, negative or positive, is only gonna do well for his pockets. So, I mean, look how many people went at his neck on Instagram. He could get paid just for that alone. He can get paid for tweeting out stupid stuff because a bunch of people are gonna retweet it. People don't know he can get paid for that, and probably does. So. Shout out to the coon. Do your thing. All right. So, other than that, some more social media beef. I'm not really going to call the first one beef. It was just a joking shot that he took at him. This was a little bit beef. Kevin Harvick, NASCAR driver, he sent a little zinger out to Donovan McNabb, former quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles, Washington football team.
Minnesota.
Minnesota and wherever else. Arizona in the offseason, he was their quarterback. I'm not talking about the Cardinals. I'm just talking about the state in general. McNabb said sometime last week that NASCAR drivers aren't really athletes. So Kevin Harvick, NASCAR driver, went on Twitter and said, yeah, cardio in the gym today. Felt like at Donovan J. McNabb in the fourth quarter. Hashtag sluggish. Zing! What did you think about that? First, what did you think about the tweet? Secondly, do you agree with Donovan? Are NASCAR drivers?
Here's the thing: everyone knows that I have criticism of certain things being called sports, such as, you know, poker or golf or things like that. But I think that in order to be be a NASCAR, I think you actually do have to be an athlete. Those guys have to stay in pretty good shape to deal with the conditions of riding in the car. Have to be agile, have to be quick, and hand-eye coordination has to be there. So I would call them athletes. I think it was pretty good, though. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that kind of stuff. Donovan didn't seem to, like, you know, really get upset about it, but...
Well, you know he did, but nobody was around to really see it, so he
probably didn't show it, really. He probably didn't really show it, but...
He said really funny, Kevin Harvick.
At the end of the day, though, here's the thing, though. Donovan is a king at sending shots, subliminal or even direct. Like, Donovan is good for that. So with him being in the media now and with him, you know, being Donovan and doing what he does, he has to be prepared for that because these days people have a platform that don't take it.
Right. And also, you know, people now can really tell how they really feel about Donovan McNabb. If he's going to take shots, then people are going to feel more comfortable with saying things about him that they probably wouldn't have said in public, you know, back when he was playing because they just want to be nice guys. You know, we told people that Donovan was a choke artist for years, but, you know, a lot of people wouldn't say anything. Now that he's taking shots at people, now everybody wants to talk about how McNabb is a choke artist. Oh, now y'all agree.
But also this. Think about it. When we grew up watching football, basketball, you would have, like, announcers or sports analysts who would, you know, say things slanderous all the time. You know what I mean, words of Jimmy the Greek. But the actual athletes didn't have a platform that they do now to basically say something back.
Say it back.
That's not filtered. Before, they would have to go to the media to get their name. But now they can go right to Twitter where there's no filter. Sometimes it's a bad thing, but for the most part, they have their own platform. They are their own media. So you have to expect that. I mean, we slander people all the time. And I've seen athletes get mad at it. You know, I've seen rappers get mad at some of the stuff I say. So it is what it is. I mean, we live in a transparent world. What you say is recorded. Everything's documented. So, like, when you make actions these days, they're going to get out. Word to Sharkeesha.
Well, I love the zinger. Back to the whole NASCAR drivers as athletes thing. I actually, you know, I had to think this over because this is something else that we posted on our Facebook forum, and people were discussing it, and I didn't really have an opinion on it, but I wanted the people to discuss it. But the more they said, it helped me make up my mind because, you know, I hate when people say stupid stuff. You can make an argument, you can have an opinion, but when you back it up with silly stuff, yo, so many people said, I drive my car every day to work, so does that make me an athlete? So I'm like, I asked a couple of dudes, like, yo, what exit on the Autobahn do you get off every morning to go to work? Because these guys are driving almost 200 miles an hour, you know, like Lamont, shout out to Lamont, who called in one day to tell us, you know, what the allure of NASCAR the allure of NASCAR was, he said there it's like a 200-mile-an-hour chess match. You know, you're playing chess with a bunch of cars. Cars are bumping you and scraping you. Let me see you control your car going that fast while people are doing that. The temperature in your car is like 100 degrees. So like you said earlier, the conditions that they're driving in are crazy. Your reflexes have to be on point.
Dumb night.
Hand-eye coordination, yeah. Just like you said. So, I thought about it as people kept trying to, you know, equate it to their own life. Well, does that make truck drivers athlete? Well, I drive my car every day and stuff like that. People will always try to put their own little spin on something, and it really doesn't make sense because I've never driven. I've seen some people speeding as I've driven to work, but I've never seen anybody, you know, going 200 miles an hour, going in and out of traffic, trying to beat the guy in front of them. So I do think that you have to be an athlete. I've done some athletic stuff in the car, you know, back in my young days when I was out there driving stupid. I've done some athletic stuff on the highway.
Yeah.
So.
Say, speaking of the Thanksgiving Day game, I saw you do a very athletic move on one of them Thanksgiving Day games.
The car coming behind me wasn't ready for that, though. So, you know, my car ended up in the shop for like, yeah. But, yeah, the more people spoke, the more I started to lean towards the side of NASCAR drivers being athletes. So, yeah, I'll say yeah as well. Another story while you guys were on the grind, remember the girl, the one who accused the Duke lacrosse team of gang raping her when they hired her at their party as a stripper? Well, Crystal Magnum, why is her name Magnum and she was a stripper? Anyway, Crystal Magnum was convicted of second-degree murder for stabbing her boyfriend in the chest during a fight back in April. He didn't die right away. He died 10 days later. That's probably why, you know, they got the charge of second-degree murder. And she faces up to 18 years in prison. She claimed that she stabbed him in self-defense after he allegedly beat and choked her and then dragged her by her hair, supposedly out of jealousy. Now, on his deathbed during that 10 days, he did admit to dragging her by her hair, but he said by the time she stabbed him, he was trying to get away. So, you know, if that's the truth, that no longer constitutes self-defense. So, she might be in a world of trouble. They got the verdict came down against her. Now it's all about the sentencing. What do you think about this whole thing?
It's a sad story. It's a tragic end to that old story. And it's like, she has the worst luck or she, you know, a bad person because at the end of the day, she came out looking very bad with the whole Duke thing. I mean, she admitted the whole line and the whole thing. So, and a lot of people were ready to go to bat for her, and she made them all look stupid. This is like an issue.
Because that program fell apart. That school was getting bad publicity. The coach had to, you know, resign from their post. A lot of the players, you know, a lot of stuff happened around that. And then, like you said, she come out, and you found out that she was lying about the whole thing. So,
yo, man. It's one of those. This is one of those crimes, man. But I hate to even hear about it or talk about it. But it's the reality of the world we live in, which is great because you hear so many stories of people lying, or even women lying about being abused, and all they're doing is making it more difficult for those that are being raped and those that are being abused, because you have so many people out there. But it's also a delicate situation, and we both know, like you know, even mentioning the word rape on Twitter one time, we got attacked by a feminist group. So it's a very delicate situation, man. You know, I watch enough Benson and Stabler know that. Listen, what you see is not always the truth. What you hear is not always the truth. But this whole story is just crazy, man, because it brought back the memories of what happened in her original case. And I'm looking at it like, damn. Well, because of that, how would she ever go to trial if he found not guilty anyway? Like, there's no way to exclude that from the record because everybody knows who she is.
Exactly, and that's what her lawyers think. They said, ironically, it didn't come up much, but it did come up. So, you know, everybody, if you weren't aware of it, you know, as a juror, you're now aware that this is the same girl who accused the Duke lacrosse team of you know, running a forced train on her, if you will. I'm from the hood. I can't think of better things to say. But... You know, they said it didn't come up much, but, you know, it was out there. They knew who it was. So her lawyers themselves think that preconceived notions of her played a big part in getting her convicted this time. And that could possibly be true because, you know, as much as, you know, the law is supposed to be a certain way, everybody in a jury is human. So if you do know about something, you might use preconceived notions against somebody. It's just human nature, no matter how many people can go up, you know, to a jury stand or, and say, yeah, I can put my feelings aside or I can do this or I can do that and be a legitimate juror. It doesn't work that way. If stuff is in the back of your mind, it's just in the back of your mind. So they were probably, once they found out who she was, they probably were judging her from that point on.
It's the same reason I never get chose for jury duty, because when I tell them the truth in jury selection, I never get chose. You know, I tell them, look, I went to law school and I don't trust the system. And I think all people of authority, cops or otherwise, are lying. They'd be like, okay, you can go home.
Bet.
Peace. I mean, because we all live off experience and we all bring our own experiences in life. And you know, you try to act accordingly, but you try to do the best you can with the knowledge you have. So at the end of the day, if you know that this is her, human nature is you're going to hold it against her. But it's sad, though, because now you have people who really go through things and, you know, anyway.
Yeah. So she's facing up to 18 years. You know, we're not going to find out. We'll find out soon what the judge is actually going to give her. But it's ironic when somebody's been in the news for something and then they pop back into the news after that. You know, like their life just doesn't go on normal, kind of like the dude George Zimmerman. You know, he got off on something that he probably shouldn't have got off on, and he's been in trouble with the law like 3 times after that trial. It's like, dude, you got a second chance, and you're gonna get in trouble like every other week. Like, who are you? So I don't know. Unfortunate situation for this young lady, Ms. Magnum. But if she did it, I don't know. And another thing they brought up in the trial, my bad, they said that she actually has a history of violence against boyfriends. So, I mean, that could just mean she attracts the wrong kind of dudes who always want to put their hands on her, or that's just, you know, violence may just be something that she and her boyfriend subscribe to. It might be, you know, the jealous type that like to start swinging on each other. I don't know.
I'm going
to
leave that alone, man.
I don't know, man. I don't know, but...
I'm going to leave that story alone. I'm done with that.
All right. Well, let's go to another one. NAIA basketball player, college basketball player, that's his conference if you guys didn't catch on to that, he won $20,000 by hitting a half-court shot at an OKC Thunder game. It seems like everybody they pick for that in Oklahoma City wins. I don't know what they have at half court or what their rims are doing, but everybody hits that shot in OKC. Anyway, he won $20,000 by hitting the half court shot. However, he's a 23-year-old sophomore who plays on the basketball team at Southwestern College. So he can't accept the money unless he forfeits his, his collegiate eligibility. It goes back to the whole thing where we talk about, you know, colleges and gifts and all that kind of stuff and paying players and this and that. In this situation, Jim, what I don't understand is this isn't like a gift that somebody's giving him. He won a prize. Like, why are the rules that strict that
now,
you can't win a prize?
Here's my question, because when you juxtapose the NCAA basketball, NCAA sports and slavery, that analogy is more strong than when people try to deal with professional athletics.
But yeah, these dudes aren't getting paid.
Yeah, my question is he just going to forfeit eligibility or is he going to lose scholarship? Because that matters.
No,
because
he forfeits eligibility. He forfeits his amateur eligibility for accepting the money. It's not just a scholarship because he's only a partial scholarship student in the first place. So that's what some people that I were talking to, they were like, well, why don't he just take the money and then play as a walk-on? He can't play at all. If he takes the money, then you're not considered an amateur anymore.
My question is, even if he's under partial scholarship, how much is it actually paying? I mean, because you gotta weigh it. Because at the end of the day, if you're not full scholarship and you're just gonna lose your eligibility, you're a 23-year-old sophomore anyway. So I don't think he had any aspirations to play at the next level. Now, with that being said, if you're receiving a partial scholarship, How much is your partial scholarship actually worth? Is it worth more than the $20,000?
Well, Doc Bay, who is actually going to be with us in the second hour, he said the tuition at this school is like $30,000. I don't remember if he said a semester or a year. It's like $30,000.
Yeah,
well,
but again,
pretty sure it's a semester with
partial.
The prices of college these days. And he's only
exactly.
on partial, right? So even if partial
so
means
partial?
Half, you know, he might be getting like $15,000 a
yeah,
semester.
Yeah, that's true too. But see, this is the thing. See, the value of college, right? The value of college is up to the person actually getting the education. Because just because you have a degree means nothing, especially in today's climate, in today's economy.
Right.
I know people with PhDs who don't have two nickels to rub together. and college debt is no joke. I mean, I sit here right now, I still owe Sally Mae like 100 racks. And
yeah,
Sally Mae is,
Sally.
You know, they want their bread. You know, so I'm fortunate enough to, you know, be able to generate income to pay them. But at the end of the day, you know, you have to really weigh this. But in terms of them and the rules and them wanting to take his money, I think it's ridiculous. Most people who listen to our show, whether you're listening live or you're listening via podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening to us at, you already know how I feel about the NCAA. This just adds more fuel to the fire. I think it's a joke. I think it's a travesty. I think that the way they're allowed to run their business or their farm system or whatever you want to call it is ridiculous. I'm not saying that every athlete should be paid, but something has to happen. And for this guy to hit a half-court shot in front of the world, which is documented and everybody sees, and he wins this award or prize, and for him to lose eligibility because of it, this doesn't make him look good at all. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and the thing is, his school is actually going to bat for him because the school appealed, and they're asking if the money can be accepted in the form of a scholarship. Now, this is the crazy thing. Remember I told you everybody does this in OKC. He's the eighth fan who's hit this damn shot. So they give out money every time they do this.
How is that even statistically possible?
Yo, he's the eighth fan who's hit this shot. I mean, that's probably the problem, though. These jabronis probably keep picking out college basketball players by mistake. Because, you know, you're supposed to do this randomly. You find a dude in the hallway, like when I shot at a Sixers game before, they just talked to me randomly in the hallway. But
yo, they tried to get me before. I was like, no, I'm good.
Yo, he's a forward, though. He's a college forward. So you walking up to, like, 6'7" dudes in the hallway, like, you want
to
shoot this shot? I'm like, yo, nine times out of ten, he's probably shot this before. Like,
the community in OKC is a little different than a lot of basketball communities. Like, OKC, Sacramento, they're like, even more OKC. It's like a younger crowd, a more vibrant crowd, and
plus, they might
want to
give out the money.
You live in OKC, for Christ's sakes. But, I mean, that's crazy, yo. That's just crazy. Crazy story.
The last
thing
on
this. So now, if I say you hit the lottery or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does he just, like, not claim it? Or I guess you could put that in somebody else's name, have your grandma or something claim it. So that way you can still keep the scholarship. I mean, you force people.
Well, if I hit the lottery, then you know school can kiss my ass for real. But
yeah, but at that point, he may say, look, I just want to play college hoops. I want to get some competitive games in.
Especially if I won
so,
like the lottery now, like Mega Millions, like $230 million. I just go out and buy my own franchise and play.
If I had to make a million for $200 million, I'm never getting dressed again. I'm walking the earth ass naked.
Yo, but this is the crazy part about the story. Now, we talked all of this in this dude's defense. He said he never planned on taking the money in the first place. His name is Cameron – what's his name? Cameron Rodriguez.
He wants to make the NCAA feel worse. I was going to give that to charity, and now they're stopping from doing so.
Exactly. He said, in my eyes, it's just money. He said, I know I'm a college kid who can use some help, but my love for basketball and my passion for the sport is worth more to me than $20,000. So he said, you know, if he can't accept the money in the form of a scholarship, he hopes, like you just said, the proceeds could be donated to a charity or a nonprofit. So you're right. He just made them really feel like jackasses.
Lying, but it doesn't matter. I would have done the same thing. I'd have wanted.
His lawyer told him to say that.
The homeless kids in Baltimore. I'd have made up a very tragic story.
Yo, his lawyers probably told him to say that. But yeah, we're gonna get Fred Perdue from Heavy in the Games on the line right after Jimmy tells us who's having a birthday this week. So Jimmy, why don't you do that? Let us know who the birthdays are brought to everybody by.
Absolutely. Our birthday segment in which we wish athletes and people in the world of sports a happy birthday on a weekly basis. is brought to you by Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates, but because we like using acronyms, we call them APA. For the best and comprehensive treatment of injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremity, visit Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates, treating patients in the DMV area. That's D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, for those who don't like our acronym, but also beyond. So anywhere you are in the world, visit this website, www.alexandriapodiatry.org, or call 703-379-0700. And you know what? I just did something I hate when people do when they give you a website and they say www. I hate
it. Yeah, we really don't have to do that anymore. But
it's alexandriapodiatry.org. The number is 703-379-0700. If you contact them, make sure to tell them that War Room Sports sent you because you get the special WRS rate to get your feet taken care of.
Yeah, I better hurry up because Dr. Roll is going to be the James Andrews of the foot. Get your foot worked
on,
and you might have like a second and third chance like Derrick Rose. All right.
Ooh, you sound like a
I like Derrick Rose, man. I like Derrick Rose.
Oh, I like Derrick Rose, too, and I guess we could talk about this later on in the show. But anyway, we'll get into this when we start talking basketball. It's now time to give birthday shout out. First birthday shout-out is to another injury-prone guy. Well, you know, maybe not anymore, but Andrew Bogut turns 29. Leandro Barbosa turns 31.
Overrated.
First down, Freddy. First down, Freddy. The people's champion. The mortgage fraud. Freddie Mitchell.
Underrated.
And Johnny Newman turns 50. We'd like to give a nice big warm salute to all these gentlemen on their birthdays. Happy birthday and as many more.
Alrighty.
Yay!
Alright, so Jim, we're going to get Fred Perdue on the line, but I'm going to let you guys know how you can get in touch with us. You can definitely reach us at our website. That's That's warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us, info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles and All's Fair in Sports and More blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, download our free War Room Sports mobile app, and to watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, make sure you click follow so you can get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. So call in and speak to us right now. Digital Extreme Technologies hotline is open. That number is 323-410-0012. Just press 1 when prompted. And if you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. So we're going to go to our college football expert, Fred Perdue of HeavyInTheGames.com, and he will let you know what's going on this week in the world of college football. So, Fred, are you there? Are you with us?
First off, I got to say happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I hope everybody's having a great day. I'm having a good one, man. It's,
no doubt. Happy Thanksgiving to you, bro.
It was very good.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm in between dessert plates, you know, on the air.
Shout out to the dessert plate.
No doubt. No doubt. So what's going on this week besides, you know, the ongoing story of Jameis Winston? They keep finding other stuff to put out there about the dude. They're ruining his rep. I think the Heisman is a distant it's just a dream now. I don't think the Heisman is within his reach anymore. But what's going on besides all of that?
Well, we call this week rivalry. Say that about 3 or 4 times. And,
I know.
But this is going to be a very interesting week. This is the week where all the stats go out the window. And we just have a lot of good old-fashioned hate. And that's what college football really is. That is what the real meaning of college football is. On the weekend where we're supposed to be thankful, we have a weekend where everybody hates us.
Everybody's hateful.
But I have 10 games for you guys, 7 picks, 3 breakdowns.
Hold on. You said you got how many games?
Yeah. This week is very, very jam-packed. It's all over the country. I had to whittle it down to 10. I had more than 10.
So you must have just given us scores.
Yeah, come on, man. There's no way it's 10 quality games. There's not 10 quality games in any sport in a given week.
I had more than 10 quality games for you. Because
all right, well, go ahead. You got 6 minutes to give us 10 games.
No, seven of them are only scores. Simply, I knew I wouldn't have enough time to give you 10 breakdowns. First off, I have the Miami Hurricanes. Got to give you the Miami Hurricanes going up. Panthers. This game, really, Miami wins this game. They'll be 9-3. Get a bowl game. This is their first bowl game before all the sanctions 2 years ago. And they're going up against a Pitt team that is fighting to become a bowl-eligible team. Two players to watch, Allen Hurns, wide receiver from Miami, and Aaron Donald, a defensive tackle, 6 foot, 280 pounds. He's one of the top guys going into the NFL draft, a guy that you'll really, really like to see if you really haven't had a chance to really look at a lot of the draft prospects going forward. He's a guy to watch out for. Next up, I got for you guys the Duke Blue Devils. Number 24, Duke, going up against North Carolina. Their arch rival, that's a basketball rivalry normally, but it's going over to the football field. If Duke wins this game, they go to the ACC title game. If North Carolina wins, well, North Carolina just wins and ruins their hopes. And we have a mess in the ACC Coastal. Players to watch, Kareem Martin, one of the top defensive tackles yet again, and Eric Ebron, the number one tight end prospect going into the NFL draft next year. North Carolina just keeps on turning out big-time prospects. Next up, I got Florida State. Florida, do we really have to even really look at this game? Florida State's going to kill them 45-10. You can just – whatever number you want to put on that side for Florida State, and Florida will throw 4 or 5 picks, and they'll give up a bunch of points. That game's a wash. Ohio State, Michigan, in the big house. Ohio State's rolling. If they win this game, they have a chance at jumping Florida State with all the issues Florida State has going on. Ohio State 35-10. That game is going to be a complete blowout. When you have Michigan who's struggling, Brady Hoke may be on the hot seat after this game, and even though they really had a chance at a bowl game, and they still do, but it's just not the season Michigan looks to have. We have USC going up against UCLA, the cross-town rivalry in L.A. It's kind of ironic it's red against blue, but we're not going to get into that. USC looks really good. If they win this game, Ed Orgeron looks to have a very solidified chance of getting that head coaching job. And UCLA, their season's kind of going down the tubes a little bit. I see USC winning this game in a close one, 24-21. We have Notre Dame-Stanford, a revenge game for Stanford. I think Stanford's going to completely blow these guys out of the water after a bad game last year where the refs completely jobbed them. We also have Clemson-South Carolina. That's one of the marquee ones. The battle for the Palmetto State. You have Sammy Watkins, Taj Boyd, Vic Beasley, Martavis Bryant, whoever you want to mention. It really doesn't matter. Those names are irrelevant. Simply because you have Jadeveon Clowney on the other side, and he's going to be wreaking havoc in their backfield. And a guy to watch out for that game is Connor Shaw. He's really playing well for that South Carolina team. 20 touchdowns, 1 interception in the last 5 or 6 games. He's really been just being a catalyst for that team. In the SEC, you have Texas A&M going up against Missouri. Texas A&M can't stop a soul, and Missouri, well, they're playing like they've never played before. Missouri, I see them winning this game in a landslide. In college football, really a landslide could easily be 3 touchdowns. Johnny Manziel will keep that team in it, but I really think Missouri has their number. Michael Sam, defensive end, going forward and going towards the NFL, he's going to be one of the top outside linebacker prospects. Just great off the edge. Johnny Manziel is going to be running for his life yet again. And last but not least, we have the big one. We all know what it is, Alabama-Auburn.
The Iron Bowl.
Alabama has won 4 of the last 5. Before that, Auburn had won every game from 2002 to 2007. The last time Alabama lost to Auburn Cam Newton was hoisting a national title. And the last time Alabama won, obviously last year, 49-0. Two players I like in this game, one from Auburn, Trey Mason, their running back. He's very dynamic. Auburn's averaging 320 yards on the ground, but they can't throw the ball. It's not saying that they can't, but they don't. Alabama stops the run. And a guy that I really like for Alabama, freshman A'shaun Robinson, just always in everyone's backfield. Alabama's the most balanced team in the country, averaging 230 yards in the air, 211 yards on the ground. For all you math junkies out there, that's 444 yards a game. This game's going to be a blowout. Alabama wins this game 35-10.
All right, now, Fred, okay. I got to stop you. I got to stop you there, too. Because you sat here and told us, I got 10 quality games for you. 7 of the games you told us are going to be blowouts. So if you got a blowout, that's not a quality game, good brother. What's going on? I got 10 games. There's 7 of them blowouts.
They're quality games in the sense that they have a lot of the rivalry in recruiting is huge. Recruiting is the lifeblood of college football. And when you have the in-state rivalry, sometimes determine who gets that better, that top recruit, whether it's the next Jadeveon Clowney or the next A.J. McCarron. That player determines where they're going based off of those wins and losses. And it also puts them in prime position. Some schools like Florida State, if somehow they just lay an egg and lose to Florida, they're completely out of the national title hunt regardless of who they play. Same for Ohio State. If they lay an egg or not even put up the necessary style points, and I throw air quotes up there with that, there is going to be a lot of havoc. And this week, before the conference championships, is really going to be a big determining week for style points.
Okay.
All right, before we get you out of here, I want to get your opinion on one more thing before we get you out of here, the Iron Bowl. Because I heard a lot of people from those two schools saying this week that it's the greatest rivalry in college football. Do you believe that to be true? Or would somebody Ohio State and Michigan have something to say about that?
I think Miami, Florida State has something to say about that, too. But I think the Auburn Bowl, the Iron Bowl does have something to hang their hat on, but it's a big
But is that just recent? Is that just recent, you know,
no,
success in that
not
game?
Not really. It's recent in the sense that Auburn and Alabama are really relevant right now. But that rivalry goes back way back into the 60s, the 70s, and even before then. But it's more relevant in the South and the SEC, whereas Michigan, Ohio State is more national. Florida State, Miami is more national. UCLA, USC is national. And one of the big ones I look at is Notre Dame Stanford. Very national. When you have a lot of powerhouses.
It is, Fred. But let's be honest,
across the country.
Let's be honest. Out of everything you said, there is one which is the granddaddy of them all. It is not Miami, Florida State. It's Michigan and Ohio State is the biggest rivalry in college football. I don't even think it's close.
I can agree with you on that. Simply put, when you have a game that is titled the big game, that's all you have to say about it. It's the big game.
Yeah, I mean,
and
I don't even think it's
going to be
there,
in the stadium
books,
over
100,000
people.
There are books and movies made about the rivalry. Like, that's crazy. Like, I mean, it has its own life. So, in my opinion.
Man, it's like Central High, Northeast High in Philadelphia, man. That rivalry go back over 100 years on Turkey Day, man.
That, but I get what you're saying. Nah. It's like Lakers-Celtics.
Ultimately, there are a few storylines behind that game, and it's mainly Brady Hoke and that Michigan team. That Michigan team did not live up to expectations. Devin Gardner, their star quarterback who took over for Denard Robinson, hasn't really lived up to anything he's really had expected of him since the Notre Dame game. And he hasn't really looked all that great as a passer. When really, I looked at him as a guy who could really move up some draft boards. They have a star receiver in Jeremy Gallen. Had a couple 200-yard games, a 300-yard game as well. But the Big Ten is just down, and Ohio State, they're just dominating teams right now. Carlos Hyde has played all season. He might be able to win the Heisman right now because he's just really putting in a lot of work. And I like what I've seen from him. He's a big 220-pound back that has a little bit of speed.
You're going to take Winston's slot.
I think everybody can take Winston's spot right now.
Yeah, he's not doing good. Fred, thanks for everything, man. We look forward to hearing from you next week with some more college football talk. Before we get you out of here, how can the people find you on Twitter?
You guys can reach me on Twitter at Fredue Sports, or you can reach me at Heavy in the Games at @HEAVYINDAGAMES. I'm going back to watch me some NFL football, guys. You have a great day.
All right. All right,
man. Take it easy.
All right. All right, Fred Perdue, everybody, HeavyInTheGames.com. College football extraordinaire. Gave you three quality games and seven quality blowouts.
Anyway, let's talk some NBA hoops. And the NBA hoops is brought to you by Fanatics. For the best in your favorite team's merchandise and apparel, that's in any sport, shop Fanatics. Shopping at Fanatics is easy. Go to our website at WarRoomSports.com. Look for the Fanatics logo and, you know, go cop up. Anyway, let's talk some hoops. And the first thing, as we always do, is you listen to my man Curtis Blow. Now, the NBA players of the week are John Wall and LaMarcus Aldridge, who is putting in work this year. The other set.
Yes, sir. John Wall led the Washington Wizards, ironically, because we talked about the Wizards in last week's show. You know, about how under these expectations they weren't playing so well. But since then, you know, they've been doing pretty well. So Wall led the Wizards to a 3-1 week. He averaged 24.3 points, 8.5 assists, 2.75 steals, played 39.8 minutes per game. He's playing pretty well. Like, John Wall is turning into that player that everybody thought he was going to be when he was drafted number one a few years back. LaMarcus Aldridge, one of the top two power forwards in the NBA, he led the Blazers to a 4-0 week, averaged 22.5 a game, 10.5 rebounds, 1.75 blocks, and he played 37.7 minutes a game. He had a season high in points, rebounds, and blocks in a game against Golden State the other night. That was 30 points, 21 rebounds, and 3 blocks. And they won 113-101 over Golden State. Like I was saying, Jim, about John Wall, I mean, the Wizards are improving. Maybe they're getting into a little groove and becoming a team that everybody kind of expected them to be. We'll see, because as we've noticed so far, this NBA thing is kind of a week-to-week thing this season.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the first 2 weeks of the season, the Wizards were trash and folding under the expectations that they might be a middle-of-the-pack playoff team. Now they're starting to get their groove, and John Wall is definitely the catalyst for that. Now, remember, prior to the season starting, you know, we threw up a versus on our social media sites of, you know, who people thought was better between John Wall and Kyrie Irving. And, of course, it was overwhelming favorite for Kyrie Irving. But I think what a lot of people did in that, you know, especially the people who come on and say it's not even close, you know, I kind of think they were shortchanging John Wall a little bit, because when it comes to these two guys, you know, you can look at all the skills and the stuff that make you go ooh and all that kind of stuff. But what I'm looking at this point that might be a big factor in this is basically impact on the actual game. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes when we talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers. But I think John Wall, you know, no matter what his stats are, and it's not like his stats are ever bad, but I think he has a great impact on his team that can't be overlooked. I mean, the Wizards, they sucked last season. And when he came back, you know, they were a pretty good team in that final stretch. So I'm starting to think that what he does to impact his team might be a little more than the impact Kyrie has, besides the fact that he shows us his raw skills every night. You know, what is it doing for the Cleveland Cavaliers as far as winning games?
Here's the thing. It was like these guys were put as being the next level of elite point guards in the NBA. So it's going to be like a rivalry that the people will make, or the hoops heads will make, which is the John Wall, Kyrie Irving argument. But there's a couple things I'm going to talk about in reference to that. The other guy in Portland who's impressing me watching him play this year is Damian Lillard. This guy, he's getting ready to put himself right there with them in that argument in terms of the point guard position, young point guards, because his game is just like, he's a grown man. But in terms of John Wall and Kyrie Irving, what another thing I realize is the power of marketing and how people are perceived. The whole job that's being done with Kyrie Irving and the Uncle Drew and the whole thing, it actually makes people overrate his game. Now, not to say that his game is amazing. He is one of the best young point guards. But the way he's marketed, it makes a difference in sports arguments. And it's crazy to say that because, yo, but we had arguments all day long on social media and in person and barbershop, and people be bringing up stuff that's irrelevant to basketball. You're absolutely right. John Wall's impact, and a lot of times you can't even quantify that. You can't measure statistically what he means to his team. And that right there is what shows how great a point guard is, in my opinion. Growing up watching basketball, the best point guards I've seen ever, Magic, the Jason Kidds, the Isaiah Thomas, these guys would impact the game, and sometimes their stats wouldn't even be like that. But watching the game, you realize the pressure they put on a defense. Even with
a Magic, like you'll have a game that you think is quiet. You know, you'll look at the end, he'll have a triple-double, but you're thinking because he didn't shoot 20 times, Magic didn't do much.
And that's the thing about great point guard play is they just change the overall dynamic of a team. I remember watching Toronto years ago, and you watch little Mighty Mouse, they would call him, Stoudemire, and his impact on the game used to be crazy, and he didn't always put up crazy numbers. But good point guards have the ability to impact the game because they put so much pressure on a defense. And John Wall, with his speed and his skill set and his jump shots getting a little bit better, he puts pressure on defenses, and they have to react so other people get open shots. A lot of times it's not the first pass which gets you the assist, but because he put the pressure on the defense, somebody's open.
Right, and so you don't get that number, you don't get that stat, but you're responsible
but
for that, for
the
that
game,
play. And that's what a lot of people don't realize, because a lot of people fake like they watch games, but they just go to the box score afterwards and they think they can tell you everything that happened in a game. Well, he only had 4 assists, so how is he this great passer and this and that? Because sometimes, like Jimmy just said, the pass sets up the pass that sets up the shot.
Let me ask
you got to watch games
tonight.
That's not going to be in the box score.
I was having a debate with somebody. You think the NBA should do their assists like hockey? Like even if you do a pass or they do a pass, you still should get an assist?
I think you should. Like if it's like obvious, like if it's clear that bucket came because the defense was, you know, bearing down on you, and you kicked this dude, and then he did a little quick, you know, hot potato pass to somebody in the corner.
Yeah.
I absolutely think that they should do their assist like that. Because, you know, to be real, to be truthful, I mean, that's what it is. Like, sometimes the defense
is
so pressed on stopping one person, you know, whatever they do is going to impact the game. So,
Chris Webber would have led the league in assists. Chris Webber was the king of having the one pass that got the extra pass that got somebody else an easy layup, you know. Yeah. So, but that's the thing. That's why just looking at the stats, you can't always tell. You have to watch the games to see that. But I think it'll be interesting in years to come. But I do think that they're doing a masterful job marketing Kyrie Irving, because I'm telling you, it matters. It matters. If you start breaking down people in their arguments, and then you realize, oh, that's why you like him. You think he's a nice guy.
Yeah, like last season, you know, when we watched Kyrie play, we started to see, like, yo, this dude really has game. But at this point, I think the marketing of Kyrie has probably surpassed his game a little bit. And like you said, that's not a diss, because he's still
not at all
a very good young player. But it's getting to the point
where
he's
got a good team behind him, because that's their job.
Yeah, we see him go to the playground in an old man suit and do the thing to the people. Like, we're like, oh, man, he got game. But, you know, that's the power of marketing. Can't knock it. LaMarcus Aldridge, I mean, his game kind of speaks for itself. Yeah. Like I say, he's in the argument to be the best power forward in the league. A lot of people think he is. Some people think he's second to maybe a Kevin Love. But LaMarcus Aldridge has actually always been nice. But he's playing out there in Portland in no man's land, and he doesn't get that marketing.
That position went from one in which there weren't any, like, dominant players to being one of the more quality positions in the NBA at power forward. It's a couple of nice young power forwards in the league. I mean, a couple of years ago, the power forward position was so bad, right, that when I played NBA 2K and you had to, like, make your creative player, I would always pick power forward. And everybody would be laughing because everybody and their mom wants to be the point guard of a team. So everybody, when they make their creative player, will pick a point guard. And I picked a weird-ass power forward. And they'd be like, why would you do that? I'd be like, you see how I put up these numbers in the league? There's no good power forward. There's no good. Yo, it's no good power forwards.
You got no competition right now. Like.
Yo, exactly. Every once in a while, you get a KG or a Duncan. Outside of that, it was nobody. So it's like now you see the Kevin Loves, you see the LaMarcus Aldridge, even Blake Griffin. You see this like guys coming in at the fourth spot. You know, and a lot of that's due with the way the game has changed. But LaMarcus Aldridge is a beast. I mean, we watched him play live last year, and it was like it was just the game just looked easy.
Yeah. He didn't force much. It didn't look like he was out there gunning or anything, but he put up the numbers because, you know, he's efficient. His game is polished. You know, he has moves in the post, which is a lost art these days. He can shoot the 15-footer. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a complete game as a big man. He's going to get you rebounds. He's not going to rebound like Kevin Love, but he's going to get you rebounds.
Because when you look at LaMarcus Aldridge and Portland and Indiana and how they're playing, and you want to see the small markets do well because, you know, these guys are staying there as opposed to doing what Carmelo and CP3 did. I want to go to the big market. So it's important to do well, and Portland is playing some great basketball right now. Like I said, Lillard and Aldridge, they're a joy to watch. They don't get too much TV time, but if you get a chance, make sure you watch those guys play their quality basketball right there. Anyway, man, let's move on from the players of the week. Let's talk about Derrick Rose. We talked a little bit earlier, but he's out for the season again. Meniscus tear. So my question to you is, do you think that, I mean, for one, here's the first question. How will it impact the team immediately? And also, what does this do to him long term?
My neck, my back, my neck and my back,
This is very unfortunate for Derrick Rose. I mean, we just went through the whole situation of him missing a whole season because he didn't want to come back until the knee was right. 11 games into the season, you know, now it's your other knee. It's not an ACL tear, but, you know, he's still out for the season for this, you know, meniscus tear. And we'll talk about that in a minute, why he's out for the season as opposed to other people who get this injury. To answer your question, the immediate impact on the team, man, it seems to me, because Derrick Rose, in my opinion, wasn't playing. He wasn't yet back to the level that we last saw him. So and his field goal percentage was down. However, I think, you know, these guys waited so long for him to come back. You know, they were just in that mode to play and have the team, you know, be built around Derrick Rose again to do what he does. But I think the fact that, you know, they had a whole year without him, even though some of the personnel changed, I think they can still be a pretty good team in the regular season. But I really don't think long-term, if we're talking long-term as in the end of this season playoff time, I really don't think they're going to have it in them again to make a serious challenge without him on the floor. I don't really know, and I picked them as my NBA champions this year. Watching them for the first several games of the season, I don't really know if they were going to be a serious challenge with Derrick Rose on the floor. So this just hurts that team, you know, even more than it looked like they were going to be hurting in the first place. Because with him on the floor, at least they had a whole season to get acclimated to playing with him again, and he probably would have gotten better and better as the season went on, you know, as it progressed. So maybe, you know, they would have made a strong challenge. But without him, it just seemed like last season, especially in the big games, because they still won some big games against some very good opponents, but it seemed like the Bulls played those kind of games where it took every ounce of energy out of those guys to get the win, and I just don't see that being this early in the season, and they got to make that adjustment again. I just don't see them being able to sustain. There's going to be a lot more injuries on the team.
My brother B. Austin said that the way Derrick Rose plays basketball isn't conducive to him having a long career because his game is built off of explosion. And he might be right because I don't see – I mean, because Westbrook may have the same issues, but, you know, hopefully he doesn't get hurt again. But the way these guys play, man, is just crazy. They play so much. And, you know, we talked to, the gentleman who's a trainer, Devin, the other Devin, not you, but the other Devin who's
Devin
a
Adams.
Trainer who trains.
Shout out to him, Devin Adams.
Shout out to Devin Adams. He's a professional trainer or what have you. It's funny, I'm going to reach out to him and get his opinion on this, but he was talking about how guys who play outdoors, you know, since they were kids, they play so much hoops, and it's so much, like, you know, going on with their joints and their bones after all these years. And then when you look at the way Derrick Rose plays, he plays basketball like a running back. Right. I mean, he really does. He plays basketball like a running back. So, but that's the way he has to play because that's his game. It's just crazy, man. It's very sad because, you know,
remember
the commercials, Jimmy? I'm coming back. You know, he's a good guy.
Right. Another thing that he said was, you know, players, you know, because of this, you know, because your body will fail on you sometimes. He said he thinks athletes should spend more time training than the actual time they actually spend working on their games, which is, interesting. He's not saying not to spend time on your game, but he's saying, you know, you can be as nice as you want to be, but if your body's going to fail on you, then it doesn't matter how much game you have.
Saying that he wished the NBA took an approach similar to football where, you know, there's less games, you know, just more practice and more working on your abilities athletically. Because the NBA is a game night in and night out. And, you know, people don't realize the toll that it takes on you. They look at football because there's so many collisions. But every sport, I mean, you know, you're moving your body in a way that is not meant to be moved. It's just crazy, man. But at the end of the day, in terms of the Bulls, they seem to play better team basketball when he's not there. But like you said, I don't think it matters there or not there. They have no chance of winning a championship.
Right. All right, now back to the whole timetable of everything, because before he got the surgery on Monday, you know, there were two choices that Derrick Rose and the Bulls and Derrick Rose's, you know, team could have made. Because one option could get you back within 4 to 6 weeks. We've seen that with a few players. Ron Artest, who must be an alien, he came back to play, what, like 12 days after meniscus surgery?
Yeah, he did.
Now, the reason Derrick Rose is going to be out for the season, you know, his recovery will be 6 to 8 months instead of 4 to 6 weeks, is because he took the blue pill instead of the red pill, and the blue pill means he and his people decided that he wanted to get it reattached and repaired. The shorter time frame, like if you can remove your meniscus altogether if it tears, you can remove it, and you can still function right, but, you know, it will probably shorten his career in the long run because, you can get arthritis in your joints faster because it's going to be bone rubbing up against bone. So he decided to reattach it, repair it, and that's going to have the longer rehab and recovery process. So he's opted to basically miss another season. And this is kind of different from last season. You can't blame him on that because he's thinking long-term about his body. Like his career can be longer this way. I mean, he would have missed two seasons already, but, hey, he might be fresh.
You just laid out the different options, right, in terms of rehab and how the work is done. And you said that Ron came back in 12 days. So when he got hurt, like,
yo, what happened to Pete?
In the words of Eric, what happened to Pete? So he must have had his torn out.
Yeah, he must. He had to, because 12 days after surgery, and Ron Artest is probably the type of dude who doesn't care. So
he said, take it out.
Yeah. And plus, he was further into his career than a Derrick Rose anyway.
Yeah,
so I don't know if he was thinking about long-term,
but
arthritis is going to be painful.
Metal World Pete limping around in a couple of years, we're going to know why. Okay. Because he did come back pretty fast from that injury.
I wasn't joking. That was like literally. He came back like 12 days after surgery, and people thought, like, what the hell? So,
yeah, because I remember them saying he was out for the season when it happened, and, you know, he was playing on, like, a Sunday basketball.
He didn't have a limp. There was nothing wrong with his bop or nothing.
He went Jack Bauer style. He probably took his meniscus out himself with a pair of tweezers, and some duct tape. But
no doubt.
That's interesting that he chose that option. Obviously, he's thinking about his long-term career. You know, he's already stealing money from Chicago at this point because Derrick Rose has made a lot of money over the last couple of years.
And he's got an extension right before he got hurt. First time he got an extension.
Absolutely.
So.
But in terms of that team,
I don't even know what
moves they can make to put them in contention, even if it takes a couple of years. Like, what assets do they have on the books? I mean, you have Noah. They talk about trading Deng every 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see the moves they can make. Like, they may have to just completely hit the button and blow it all up.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the type of thing where, like, a Nate Robinson, they let him walk because, frankly, Derrick Rose was coming back. Now Derrick Rose is gone, and they don't have that spark that they had to take up the scoring. Because, you know, Chicago, if you watch Chicago, you know, even last season before Nate came in and became their little hero, they were very painful to watch, you know, as far as trying to get buckets consistently.
It's like 1980s in NFC East football, you know. It's like 6-3 scores. It's completely terrible to watch them play basketball. I mean, you know, they do everything right fundamentally, but they just can't shoot. They just can't shoot. So, I mean, we'll see what happens long term, man. Get healthy, Derrick Rose,
right,
because we love to watch him play. But at the end of the day, man, speaking of injuries and coming back, Kobe Bean Bryant got a 2-year extension. A 2-year extension. So he'll be there 2 more years. And,
while recovering,
you know,
from an Achilles at 35 years
old. Exactly. While recovering from an Achilles. So my question to you is this. What do you think? Do you think this is the right move for the Lakers organization? Now, we're not even going to say it's the right move for Kobe because I would have signed too. But
yeah, no doubt.
In terms of the franchise.
Yeah, because he actually went to Twitter defending all the people saying he should have took a pay cut. Like, shut up, everybody, with this athletes and pay cut stuff. First of all, y'all putting athletes on a pedestal that they shouldn't be on. You wouldn't take a pay cut at work because y'all got a new employee or y'all wanted to get a new employee. So why the hell should that? I'll get back to that rant in a minute because that's silly. That's stupid. All right. Kobe and the Lakers. The Lakers, of course you can't say – you can't say, oh, this was great right off the bat because of the fact that he's recovering from an Achilles injury. He hasn't played. He hasn't been able to show them what level he's going to play at once he comes back. See, from you look at it from that aspect, a pure basketball aspect, you're like, now, you know, what are they doing? Then on the other hand, you look at it from the fact that Kobe does drive a lot of their, you know, a lot of their revenue and things like that, so you may want to get him back into the fold just to, you know, until you can get, you know, the team back up to where it's supposed to be, because he is, man, he is beloved in that city. So, you know, he drives a lot of the revenue and not only just the Staples Center, just in Southern California in general, because out of all these cities out here, these major cities that are like football towns, That's a basketball town. It's not because the Clippers are good right now.
So, not at all. So what you're basically saying is there's business decisions and then there's basketball decisions.
This is a business investment. This is a, and at the same time, remember we talked about how the Lakers went into this season with like one player who was going to be signed past the end of this season. I believe that player was Steve Nash, and they might find a way to get rid of him because his career is probably over. So even with the money that they're paying Kobe, they're still going to have money to get another max player and then, you know, supplement them with a few other players. So if – now this is a gamble. This is the gamble part. If he can come back and play at a pretty high level and they're maybe able to land somebody like a Carmelo Anthony, who I don't think would mind playing with Kobe Bryant, then it won't look so bad. But
now,
right now you're like, what are they thinking?
First thing, in terms of him taking the money and people saying that he shouldn't have taken it, FOH, to quote legend Randy Moss, man.
Straight cash, homie.
You got to take that money. Straight cash,
Jim. And plus, he's maybe, because of this contract, he's maybe 2 years from retiring. This is the point. You have 5 rings. Get all the money that you can get. You're about to start life without this thing called basketball. Like the people,
I think Kobe Bryant
slap
is the third – has generated the third most income strictly from the NBA in the history of the NBA. If I'm not mistaken, last time I checked, number one was Kevin Garnett, who made upwards of $315 million just in contract money. Shaq was number two. Shaq was number two. He was like $280, $290 million. Then was Kobe. And this right here may push Kobe to, you know, above Shaq. Maybe he's still competing with Shaq. Who knows? with that being said, basketball-wise, I'm not going to lie. I thought this Lakers team would be a lot worse than they are. And this is before Kobe even plays. Like, I watched them play, and they compete with teams. They've won a couple of games that shocked me. And they've competed in games that they shouldn't have competed. So
right.
You know, they're playing okay basketball now.
Everybody does that.
Yeah, and that stinks. That ain't hard to be in here, but still. It's a house party. But I think that if Kobe comes back, like you said, they'll have a lot of money to spend. L.A.'s still an attractive market. Carmelo's a free agent. You know, we'll see what LeBron does. But I have a strong feeling that Melo may end up, you know, Melo may end up wearing that purple and gold.
Like, you don't see them all buddy-buddy, huggy-kissy, you know, like a lot of these guys. But, you know, when they play in the Olympics, you know, they always say that they're, like, best friends in the league. I guess, you know, like I said, they just don't show it like everybody else. But it's possible in this era of, you know, let me go play with my man. Carmelo might do that for two years, see if they can grab one before Kobe leaves. Now
and I mean,
more on that.
A lot of people were speculating that he went to New York because of his wife and her aspirations to, like, you know, be on TV and radio. But if you're not in New York, where's the next best place to be? Or might even be better. Hollywood.
She's in Hollywood. She could turn that reality show into a movie. Like, come on now.
She's already been
in movies. So, you know, she had a little role in what's the joint came out last year?
Think like a man.
Mm-hmm. Act like a smut. But Kobe, he talked to Yahoo Sports, you know, because he was defending his two-year, $48.5 million extension. You know, for all the people talking about he should have taken a pay cut. First of all, a lot of times when these guys are reported to have taken a pay cut, it's never really what it seems. It's like they've always found some kind of contract cap rule loophole where, you know, you may take less than what it, you know, in a certain year, but it's backloaded and you get the money. Like the Tom Brady thing, they just move money around so they were able to sign more people. But in the long run, and maybe in the short run too, with the bonus, with the signing bonus, Tom Brady still got the same amount of money that he was going to get. Everybody talks about LeBron and Wade and Bosh taking less money to do this and that. Okay, there's no state income tax in Florida, so if you weigh your options and say, okay, I could go to New York, we can stay in Cleveland, we can go to Toronto, we can go somewhere else, with the tax implications, they were still going to be making the same thing they make now in Miami by, you know, taking a quote-unquote pay cut. So, I mean, you got to weigh these things instead of just, you know, talking out the left side of your neck. Kobe said this to Yahoo Sports, quote, "Most of us have aspirations for being businessmen when our playing careers are over. But that starts now. You have to be able to wear both hats. You can't sit up here and say, well, I'm going to take substantially less because there's public pressure, because all of a sudden if you don't take less, you don't give a crap about winning. That's total bull." And you know him. He's 18 years in the game now, so he just curses at press conferences.
Yeah, he's like that old granddad that lost his
yeah, old,
a couple years.
Old angry ass. He said, "I'm very fortunate to be with an organization that understands how to take care of its players and put a great team out on the floor. They figured out how to do both. Most players in this league don't have that. They get stuck in a predicament, probably intentionally done by the teams, to force them to make less money. Meanwhile, the value of the organization goes through the roof off the backs of their quote-unquote selfless players. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard." Now, that's one thing that I hear all the time, but, you know, when we talk about Kobe Bryant, a lot of people really don't care for him personally. So the things they believe with other players, they don't believe the same thing when it comes to somebody that they don't like, because I've seen people say all the time, "Oh, man, why not? They better get all they can. Them owners are doing this and doing that and getting rich off their money. They better get all they can." But then when it comes to somebody you don't like, "He should take a pay cut. He's selfish." I've come to this conclusion,
and I actually came to this conclusion while having a hip-hop debate with somebody yesterday. Somebody on Google Plus yesterday told me that Ice Cube was whack because something about him being whack because of his role as a family man or something or another. And I was sitting there thinking about it, and I said, it actually applies to Kobe as well. Kobe and as well as Ice Cube, let's throw them in the same thing. And, you know, where am I going with this? These are two guys who won't be appreciated until they're gone. When Kobe is no longer in the game, I think that the entire perception of him will change, and people will, like, you know, look at him and his career, his accomplishments, you know, a little different. Because at the end of the day, right, people always say he wants to be like Mike and this, that, and the third with Mike. He's not Mike. Mike is Mike. Kobe is Kobe. But when you look at his resume, and just say you're not doing it for comparison's sake, but just to look at accomplishments, when you look at gold medals, NBA championships, scoring titles, MVPs, playoff performances, highlights. When you look at his body of work, regardless of whether you're a Kobe fan, if you're a Kobe hater, you have to respect it. You know, and the same thing – all right, here, now watch how I do this. Now, the same thing also applies for Ice Cube. Even though he's a family man, look at what he has done. He's grown up, and, you know, he can't be the same Ice Cube who was, you know, using the B word and cussing people out. He grew up. His body of work in Hollywood, and then his two classic albums as a hip-hop artist, he, as an entertainer, I mean, you have to respect his body of work. But
and he bought us
time,
N.W.A. Like, he wasn't the leader of the group, but he wrote that damn lyric.
He bought,
so
America's
really
Most
N.W.A.
Wanted. Hold up. Then in between the Family Man and N.W.A. and Ice Cube, he bought us Friday.
Mm-hmm.
In Barbershop. I'm just
classic,
saying. I mean,
hood classic.
We have this thing with, like, our entertainers and athletes or just in general, our leaders. We don't appreciate people until they're gone, right? And
mm-hmm.
and Kobe went through a phase where people loved him, then they hated him. And, you know, LeBron, too. But it's just out of control, man. Kobe, when Kobe leaves the game, watch it shift. You hear me say it now. It's going to shift. It's going to shift, and that's what's going to happen because his accomplishments are through the roof, man. We got Doc Bay who's joining us. He just finished busting his grub. Doc Bay, what's good?
What's up? What's up, War Room family and generals? Happy Turkey Day, everybody. I just wanted to chime in real quick, even with the Kobe situation. I mean, this contract signing has had the most back-and-forth banter of almost any contract signing because prior to that, you had people saying Kobe should take less money, he shouldn't try to max out, and then Kobe signs the deal. Then you hear the backlash on all media outlets and social media and newspapers of why he shouldn't have taken it, why he should have taken it. Then I'm playing basketball, and I'm hearing Laker fans saying, oh, yeah, definitely, we're going to win a chip now. You know, we're good. Don't worry about it. And then you hear Kobe defend some of the negative comments about the contract. So it's pretty interesting to look at. From my own personal estimation, with the NBA salary cap being at $59 million currently and maybe going up to $60 million next year and Kobe taking a chunk of that 24, they do have enough to sign another max player, but will that max player be enough? Whereas had he taken $12 million the way KG and Tim Duncan did, maybe they can find more young talent to keep the team afloat during the season. So I think it hurts the Lakers in the long run only because of what they have to face in the West and possibly in the East if they were to make the finals. But I mean, he definitely deserves the money. You know, you can't knock the man for taking his value.
Quick question to you, Doc Bay, because you just got on. We just finished talking about your Chicago Bulls, and you are a Bulls fan. So just briefly give us your opinion on the Derrick Rose situation.
Man,
what it does to impact the squad.
Yeah, I think with him this year, we probably would have won 58 games. Without him this year, we'll probably win 50 games. With him, we probably make it to the Eastern Conference Finals or second round. Without him, we probably just get sent home in the first round or overachieve and make it to the second round. The injury itself, I think because he plays with such violence, just in his move to the basket, I don't think his knees can uphold his style of play. Like if he played a more laid back type of game,
yeah, we talked about that because B. Austin said the same thing. And my analogy was that he plays basketball like a running back.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So those ligaments are tired. Like even now, let's think of all the different moves that he's done. He's played four years, but his body has done like 12 years worth of cuts.
Yeah, no
in
doubt,
3 years.
No. All right, well, listen. Let's move on to another topic real quick. AI, Bubba Chuck, Allen Iverson, War Room legend.
Quick one.
It's to have his jersey retired on March 1st. I swear, I feel like AI is being honored every year in Philadelphia.
Yo, the Sixers need something to bring some people to one game every 2 months.
I feel like they, like, usually just bring AI out the closet. Like, you know what I mean? Like, every couple of months,
they have a roster spot. Yo, he got to be better than Tony Roten.
Tony Roten be balling a little bit, though. Tony Roten be balling. Or at least
listen,
they just sit him up in the arena. Just sit him in the owner's box just so people come to the game. Go ahead, Jim.
Me and Dev have had some sports debates through the years, man. And one debate was that when Dev talks about his the greatest point guard of all time, man. because you know I'm a Magic Johnson fanatic. But Dev loves Jason Kidd, right?
Uh-huh.
But here's my question, yo. Let's talk about Jason Kidd as a coach now. Because he seemingly had an intentional cup spill. Cupgate is what I'm calling it, because you know he's so gate behind everything.
Yo, Jason Kidd is embarrassing me, man.
Yo, what's going on with J. Kidd? How long will he actually last in Brooklyn? And is he the problem?
Oh,
because for all intents and purposes, if you watch the next play, yo, he doesn't do anything. He doesn't draw up any plays. His assistant coach draw up plays.
That's the point.
He's just there.
That's
just
the point.
There.
That's the point, though, Jim. He's not. He doesn't seem to be doing anything. Now, in certain situations, you can look at that and you'd be like, okay, that's cool because, you know, he has his team so prepared, you know, that, and he has his coaches so prepared that they can do that. Like, Phil Jackson can sit back while his team
mm-hmm.
is you know, on the bad end of a 13-0 run. He can sit back and chill. He can go into a huddle. And he didn't do this a lot, but if he wanted to go into the huddle and let Brian Shaw or somebody draw up a play, he can do that because we know his pedigree, his resume. We know that he has the guys prepared. But Jason Kidd got a job right off of the court. Seriously, he's in the mold where he needs to be trying to prove himself instead of trying to act like he's a 15-year veteran and a winner at coach. So, like, even talking about the thing in question, Jim, if whoever's out there and they're living under a rock. Towards the end of the game the other day against the Lakers, Jason Kidd and the camera caught, and that's another thing he doesn't realize, there's cameras everywhere in today's sports. The camera caught, he had a drink in his hand. The camera caught him saying to one of his players, I think it was Tyshawn Taylor, he told him, he said, hit me. Like, so as he was coming off the court, Tyshawn Taylor bumps into Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd dramatically spills his drink, so they have to come clean it up because they didn't have any timeouts. This is why this happened. They had to come clean it up, and while they were cleaning it up, Jason Kidd had his assistant coach draw up a play so they could try to win this game. Of course, they, you know, Paul Pierce missed the three. They didn't win the game. But, you know, Tyshawn Taylor and Jason Kidd tried to deny this when it was obvious, man. Everything. This is like the dude in D.C. who tried to slip on a banana peel in the elevator and think that the camera didn't see him looking at the camera three times and placing a banana peel on the floor. This is the same thing. Like, what are you doing,
Jason
Kidd?
Does he at least get an A for effort, man? Because here's the thing, right? In the NBA and all sports, the reason we have rules is because we have people like Jason Kidd who try to think of ways to get around the rules. It's the reason why in the NFL, if you have an injury, you get like a 10-second runoff because people used to fake injuries when they didn't have timeouts. You know what I mean? So that's the analogy I want to make there. But he has to get away for effort. At least
but
Jim,
can I say it was more egregious because of this reason, though? Because he did all of that, and then somebody else drew up the play. That's what I'm like, Jason Kidd, you have to show
that's
these people that you
story.
Know what you're doing because people are already
that's
calling for your
story.
Head. I mean, like 11 games into the season.
So wait, so y'all saying that kid should have been so he should be retroactively fined for flopping? You know how players get fined for flopping?
Yeah,
actually,
maybe,
the NBA might look into it. They actually might be looking into it. He probably
here's the thing, man. You brought up Phil Jackson, man. I have a whole different level of respect for Phil Jackson after reading his book. But the thing is, Phil, even though Phil was kind of laid back, Phil still would grab his, you know, as Bernie Mac like imitated him in the movie. Scotty! He was still like do his thing every once in a while. He grabbed the clipboard and take control and, you know, draw something up. You know, Jason Kidd does nothing. I've watched a game where he literally does nothing. Like, he does nothing at all. At all. I'm like, yo, how are you
he
collecting
just
collect check?
A check.
He does nothing
check.
At all. Yo,
Mike Brown has always done the same thing, too. Mike Brown will call a timeout, and he'll turn his back on the huddle. And, you know, his players be in there talking amongst themselves. I'm like, yo, what are you doing?
He's faking the gig.
Did y'all hear Paul Pierce going back at Jason Kidd? Because Jason Kidd said, you know, they're not playing up to their level. I should have played the second unit in one of the games to close the game out. And then Paul Pierce fired back saying, well, we're not adjusting at halftime. You know, teams are changing against us, but we're not doing anything to adjust.
Oh, man.
And then KG stepped in and tried to cool everything out.
And that's going to be the problem because he's, like, especially since they went out and got these older guys. These are Jason Kidd's peers. Of course, he was in the league, you know, a little longer than Pierce and Garnett, but not that much longer, especially than Garnett. Like, that's his homie. Like, they're in the same age bracket. So this is just a crazy situation from the start. Like, I was happy for him, but, of course, I was questioning, like, it takes a lot of people all this time to get a coaching gig, and you got to be an assistant for all these years, and he just stepped straight from the court over to the sideline. And now,
my
you
man
know,
Brian Shaw.
You would think he'd be
Brian
the hardest
Shaw
working coach
like,
in the league. You would
absolutely
think.
Prove Billy so. King. Brian Shaw has spent 12 years in the league.
Yeah. Know, right? Yo, and then Brian Shaw's team is going to stink. He's going to get fired and never get a chance again. Watch.
Yeah. Yo, it's because it's like a good old boys network. They rotate the same coaches like over and over again. And, you know, it is what it is, man. But Jason Kidd, we'll see how long it lasts. But it's making it
hey, free a Avery Johnson. Free Avery Johnson. They went
free
from
Avery,
Avery
Johnson.
Free Slavery Johnson, man. Slavery Johnson.
Speaking of, you know, point guards, this team has possibly the point guard with the best handle in the National Basketball Association.
Late two, whoever's out of hand, I'm going to give them handles. Light them up, blow them out like candles.
And that is the Cleveland Cavaliers and Kyrie Irving. What do you guys think about Cleveland as a team? Are they getting any better?
No. I don't think Cleveland's getting any better. They got a lot of young talent, and everybody says, you know, they're going to be better, this and that. But like I spoke about earlier, I think with all the talent Kyrie has, you know what I'm saying, and I acknowledge it, but I think a lot of people may have drank the Kool-Aid a little too early on how high he may rank as an NBA point guard. I don't think his impact is that of a superstar player, you know, right now. Mm-hmm. He has the talent of a superstar player, and he can go out and give you numbers. But what is it really doing to earn victories for the 4-11, whatever they are, Cavaliers? And
the
Andrew
Lakers
Bynum, I actually think the Sixers may have dodged a bullet with that. Like, Sixers fans could be mad all they want that he took that money and then left. I think it's the best thing that he left because he's done.
Yeah,
he's done.
It's definitely a terrible thing, man, to see that. But, you know, I
One
just don't
I
know.
I was going to say that the Cavs, they have a lot more hype around them than ever, but, well, since LeBron left, but like I said, they're still 4-11. I mean, you have
still
like
the
Wizards, Bobcats, Hawks, Lakers, Sixers, like all these teams, even the Magic are better than the Cavs right about now.
Yeah,
that's
so
crazy,
they better get it together because this team
does have
a lot of hype. Real quick, because I know we got to move on and talk, squeeze, you know, it's football, it's Turkey Day, we got to talk some football. But we had a question on our Facebook page from Robert Moreland, who is a Cavaliers fan. And his question, we don't have to be long and drawn out with this, you know what I'm saying? His question was, has the league figured Kyrie out? Has his Uncle Drew fame gone to his head? Or has he been, quote-unquote, cavaliered? And that basically means used to drive ticket sales but not given an adequate supporting staff to build a legacy. Now, for the people who would say that that's the case, I think a lot of people will be going back on a lot of the things they said because a lot of people was praising Cleveland because they're building a nice young nucleus and they got enough talent to maybe draw LeBron back there in a couple years because we know he's not trying to go anywhere where there's not talent. So for people to say that now, I think it would be a cop-out because they're trying to defend Kyrie Irving. I don't think the league is caught up to him. I think Kyrie Irving still plays with a little bit of selfishness, you know what I'm saying? And you know, I think sometimes he's worried about oohing and aahing and getting his, and I think the Drew fame might be going to his head a little bit. But I'm not going to say the league has caught up to him, but I definitely think he may have regressed a little bit. Even if it's not regression, he hasn't moved to the next step to where we thought, everybody thought, like, okay, he's going to be a superstar now. And I don't know.
Is the coaching in place, though?
Oh, you're saying Mike Brown is the problem?
Mike Brown took him to the finals, yo. Mike Brown took him to the finals.
Just asking.
Well,
just
I mean,
asking.
To be an offensive-minded point guard to play under Mike Brown, I'm pretty sure there's some headbanging going on there. I'm pretty sure they're not always in cahoots, so that could be a thing too. He could have the wrong coach.
I think Kyrie, I'm surprised with the skill level that he has, he's only getting 6 assists per game. And regardless of how
he
likes
to shoot,
the team is, yeah, and the thing is, and he's only averaging 20. He averages in the 20s, so you would think, okay, if he's going to be more of a shooting point guard, maybe he should be in the 25, 26, 27 range.
Right.
Or if he's going to be a passing point guard, okay, give us 18 and 10. Even Chris Paul will give you 18 and 10 on bad teams. So,
right. Now, Kill, and what was the knock on Allen Iverson? He was selfish, but Allen Iverson was averaging like 6-plus assists,
yeah,
but he was getting you 28 points a game.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Make up your mind, Kyrie.
5, 6, 7, 8. His rookie year, he averaged like 8 assists his rookie year, 23
But
points.
Like Jimmy said, marketing, Kyrie's a nice guy, so he's not going to get the same knocks that Allen Iverson got.
Listen, man, it really costs nothing to be nice, man, and it goes a long way.
And they're shopping Deion Waiters, which I kind of agree with because he's another dude who's just in there to shoot. So if your point guard is already doing that, you know, he might not need two of those guys because they start him a lot.
I mean,
he started nine of the 13 games this season.
Quality. Another thing is that they've had quality draft picks over the last couple of years. Do you think that they've used them the way they should have? I mean, you know.
Yeah, what's up with Bennett?
Your man Bennett got like 2 points for the season. So.
Yo,
that's what I'm saying.
All the metrics say he was supposed to be a beast.
But that's what I'm saying.
Lie. Stop listening to them damn metrics.
That's what I'm saying. Like they've had quality picks, but you know, just haven't utilized them properly, at least as of right now, man. So we'll see what happens with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
And then they got Jared Jack coming off the bench. His last name is right. Because he likes to come in and take big shots from the superstars because he think, you know, he should be doing that. So.
Very active.
Too many little dudes on the team that want to score. Put it that way.
We'll
too many little dudes
anyway,
that want to score and Bynum's a
before we jump into some football talk, though, tell everybody how they can get in touch with us.
Real quick, everybody, y'all can, as usual, y'all can check out our website, warroomsports.com, to call in and speak with us about any of today's topics. Dial the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. If you're listening from your phone already, just press 1 if you want to talk. So, yeah, let's talk about some football because we got some football action going on right now. As a Philadelphia Eagles fan, I'm not liking what's going on right now. Akil is a Dallas Cowboys fan, so I'm pretty sure he's digging what's going on right now. But
not really, though. Not really.
Yeah, because it could have been easier. But and our NFL Wrap is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, iPhone, Android phone, your BlackBerry or your Palm phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory or storage wasted. Downloading is easy. Just click on the Stitcher logo on our website and listen, or download to your mobile phone directly from that page. Before you do, enter the promo code The War Room, all one word, for a chance to win a cash prize. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. All righty now. All right, quick recap of the early game, which
if that's
you know,
what you want to call it.
Yeah, it would. You know. At first, we had ourselves a game. Detroit ended up beating Green Bay, 40-10. It was one of those things where, from the beginning of the game, you kind of knew, even though Detroit came out not playing too well, Green Bay just can't sustain. And I think it's. I mean, this is the obvious, but. Further shows you the value of an Aaron Rodgers. I'm not saying it's a given that they would have won this game had they had Aaron Rodgers, but this team just looks sad without him. This is how much they lean on him.
It's amazing to me. Well, first off, in one of my fantasy leagues, and by the way, hashtag I hate fantasy football, Aaron Rodgers was my quarterback, and I was in the mix. Aaron Rodgers goes down. I haven't won a game since. So, as the practice season goes, so did my fantasy season. But it's amazing to me watching them play how the defense plays better when he's at quarterback. I don't know if it's one of those things because the time of possession changes, so they're on the field now.
It's really unfair. It's my team. It's my quarterback. And if you guys do that, man, it's unfair.
Word to T.O. is not fair. But the thing is, though, I don't know if it's because of the time of possession or if it's one of those things where they just have more confidence because they know that guy's going to take the team down and they're going to put up points. But the defense doesn't seem to play with the same level of intensity. They look like they're less talented, believe it or not, when he's not playing. It's just crazy. It's, it's amazing how one player can have that kind of effect on an entire team even the team that he's not on the field with. But it's true. That's what happens.
Packers and Broncos, my Super Bowl pick. But, yeah, they look lost without this guy. And you take it to Matt Flynn because he was like their last-ditch effort, figuring, you know, this guy still knows the system even though he stinks everywhere else. He played all right there. He played all right last week when he came in relief. But today, he showed what he showed in his brief appearance in Oakland. Like, Matt Flynn has some of the worst pocket presence I've ever seen in my life. Like, this guy, he doesn't have that prototypical quarterback teaching that you hear people praising, like, yeah, in the pocket, he knows how to slide away from danger. He has that mental clock. He steps up into the holes. Like the guys will, the defensive ends will do their thing. The tackles will block them around the guy, and he'll just stay there. Like, he's not anticipating that these guys are going to keep rushing him. Once they push him, you know, past you, you got to step up into the pocket that they made you, either let the ball go, make a decision, run, or do what you got to do. He stands there, and, you know, a lot of times when you see somebody, even when you see somebody get sacked or you see somebody get the ball batted out their hand, on a slow-motion replay, you can see their eyes kind of, you know, you can see them flinching up because they know they're about to get hit. They know they stayed there too long. This guy completely gets blindsided every time he gets hit in the pocket because he has no idea what's going on around him.
That's because he's daydreaming about his bank account.
You got a diesel one. So, yeah, it's not really much to talk about in that game. Like I said, Detroit came out flat. And they got it together because the Packers were so bad, they gave them that opportunity to play bad for a while and get better. So, shout out to Detroit.
Or was that game boring? That's boring. Even though
even with all the points,
it was just boring.
Yeah, even with all the points, it's boring. Plus, that's the game you're watching when you're actually waiting for the food to be done. So that might play a part in its boredom. But the game that's going on now, the Oakland Raiders at the Dallas Cowboys. This, I mean, 28-21, Cowboys are actually marching. But this game started out kind of surprising because Oakland put up some quick points, and they were actually holding their own. Like, I didn't think Oakland had a shot in this one, and they probably still don't, but they've actually made it more interesting than I thought it would be. What are your thoughts on that, Kill, as a Cowboys fan? Because you said not really earlier.
I mean, as a Cowboys fan, I kind of understand. We get A in the owner department, F in the GM department, so we're going to keep putting out C teams. So I kind of want us to do so bad each year now that Jerry Jones is forced to remove himself as GM and bring in a GM.
Ain't gonna happen.
So I'm actually, sometimes when we're down, I'm like, yes. Like, maybe if we go 5-11, or we don't go to the playoffs, they'll reconsider his options and bring in a GM. So that's where I am at the moment.
That ego will never, ever, ever allow that to happen. That's a different kind of ego right there.
If it was me, I would run my team in the ground too. It's my money. I basically treat the NFL like it's my fantasy team because that's exactly what it is.
Well, Jim, you're getting a lot of numbers from DeMarco Murray today because you know he has.
And the funny thing is, I have him in three leagues. So DeMarco Murray, we appreciate that, man. It's crazy because I told you.
I don't know if you're aware. He has three touchdowns so far in this game.
Yeah, hashtag I hate fantasy football, but I'm having a great year, like, picking games. Like, you know, I'm rolling in our pick'em league. But then I was sitting there looking at my picks for the season, and I picked the Broncos and Seahawks in the bowl, and they're 10-1 and 9-2 respectively. So, you know, I'm doing a little pretty good with my picks. But fantasy-wise, man, I think I got to at least cut the amount of leagues I'm in next year, man, because this is ridiculous. But in terms of the Cowboys overall, man, you know, I want to see what happens with the NFC East because it's turning into a nice race between the Eagles and Cowboys. We'll see what happens.
We'll see. And like I said, I got a little excited because I thought the Raiders were going to go ahead and help us out, but you know, DeMarco Murray is still running all over these dudes.
And once you get into the playoffs, nothing else matters. This is why I started getting scared a couple weeks ago. I was like, oh, here come the Giants drawing again. But thank God the Cowboys beat them because if they'd have won that game against the Cowboys, yo, I'm not going to lie, I would have started worrying. I said they're going to sneak in the playoffs, end up in the bowl somehow, and win the bowl again.
and win it at home in New York. Is McFadden a bust? Is Darren McFadden a bust?
Darren McFadden can't stay on the field.
When he's on the field, he's productive, but he's not on the field.
Yeah, he can't stay on the field. He got, like, the worst hamstrings ever. I guess you would have to call him a bust.
Because he was supposed to be AP.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, if he's supposed to be that good, because it's not like he's getting these major injuries. He's not going out with, like, ACL tears and stuff like that. He's a hamstring-type dude. I mean, that happens to those fast dudes, but, damn, you're not breaking that many runs to where you're running that hard to pop your hamstring.
It's like I watch him play, and he's productive when he plays. I mean, my man, he'd be throwing touchdowns, and it's hard for me to call him a bust only because I look at guys like Mark Ingram, who were also drafted high, and I'm like, oh, God, you are terrible. It's hard for me to call McFadden terrible because you're just that bad.
And DeMarco Murray can only play in 400-yard intervals. So watch out for that, Jimmy. Every 400 yards,
he'll be injured.
But here's the thing about DeMarco Murray, though. DeMarco Murray doesn't have, like, breakaway speed. I see him getting runs where if he had a little bit more breakaway speed, he probably could take a lot of, like, long runs to the house. Like, he's good for a 20-yard run and he'll run out of bounds.
Yeah. All right, so you guys can just give me your pick on the late game, Steelers-Ravens. Who you got in this one? The Steelers have come on as of late. Ravens still in the fight, even though, you know, they're not playing like they won the Super Bowl last season. They're still in it.
I usually would just roll with the home team in this game because it's like a great rivalry and a big game. But I think I'm going to roll with the Steelers, man. They're playing good football right now. Shout out to Jim Ricalto of Sports King. They have Antonio Brown, a.k.a. Jerry Rice, on their team. So they're playing good football right now at the right time, man. So I think I'm going to go with the road team, which is, you know, I usually just pick the home team when these two teams meet up, but I'm going with the Steelers.
5-6 and 5-6. These two teams are going to be battling for that last wild card spot.
Yep.
Because it seems like, you know, if Kansas City just holds, you know, stays pat right now, you know, even if they don't win the division over the Broncos, they'll be a wrap for that first wild card spot. So everybody else after the 9-2 Kansas City Chiefs, you know, are 5-6. The Steelers, the Ravens, the Titans, and even the Chargers in the AFC West. So this game is a big game. You know, it's as big a game as 2 5-6 division rivals could possibly have. I think the Ravens are going to pull it out at home. So, you know, that's my pick on the game. Cool, who you got winning it?
I have the Ravens picking. I mean, I picked the Ravens in ESPN. I picked, can pick them for War Room Sports, so I'm going to stick with that pick, the Ravens at home.
All right.
And the thing about it is, this is a game they probably should win, but those are the ones they always seem to lose somehow.
Yeah. Well, Brandon Browner, and as DeMarco Murray gets to the one, I'm playing Jimmy this week in fantasy, so if he scores again, y'all might hear me. You might hear some static on my side.
Man, I don't have Aaron Rodgers. I don't have Aaron Rodgers in that league, so you're good, man. You're good. You're good.
Yeah, but my running backs give me like 3 points apiece every week. So it's all about the individual matchups. He going 26. He going to take like – he going to cover enough to keep you in it against two of my running backs and maybe one of my receivers. I might not get 26 from three players. And he's about to score again, so he's going to be in the 30s. So – anyway,
let's go, DeMarco. Let's go.
Because hashtag I hate fantasy football, just like Jimmy just said. the Seahawks defensive backfield in a little bit of flux. Brandon Browner has a groin injury, but that's not the biggest news in his life. He's facing a 1-year suspension for violating the substance abuse policy. Walter Thurman, 4 games for violating the substance abuse policy. What's going on in Seattle? Golden Tate called those guys out saying that, you know, it was pretty selfish on their part because you kind of know coming into the season, you know what this team is about and where we could possibly go. And, you know, to do something like that is just selfish. Do you agree with him? And what the hell is that
now,
with Brandon Browner?
I do agree with him because I felt the same way about Von Miller. It's like when you look at your roster and you see here's the thing. In order to win a championship, it takes a lot. It takes talent. It takes skill. It also takes a little bit of luck. But when you see that, you know, you have 2 out of 3, you have to, like, just find a way to stay on the field, especially when you're a player with that much talent. And it is kind of selfish on their behalf. But it also makes me look at the league weird because he got caught smoking weed.
Right.
And he's about to miss the season. My man, Alden Smith, like, is DUIing, catching bodies, carrying weapons, doing all kinds of nonsense, and he's able to come right back. And I do understand that, you know, that's the way, that's the, way the law works in real life as well as sports, but still, something's wrong with that.
Yeah, they don't have a structure in place for that. Like, with the Substance Abuse joint, they got a structure for that. You get 4 games and you get a year, you know, stuff like that.
Exactly.
They have a structure for
it. And I get it. I get it.
Alden is out there.
It's sort of like when you see somebody get locked up on their third strike. Somebody gets a third strike and, you know, it's like a nonviolent. I guess that's why they changed the law. It had to be
like
a violent.
He stole some a slice of pizza, but he's going to jail for life because it's
the
third strike.
I mean, it's one of them things. I'm juxtaposing his situation with Alden Smith, and I'm like, hold up. So Alden Smith is riding around with, like, firearms, DUI, multiple DUIs, cop chases. He's on his Grand Theft Auto, John, and he gets a couple weeks. My man was smoking a joint, and he gets a whole year.
I know.
All right, so it's unfortunate because, you know, the heart of their team is their secondary. So
absolutely.
You know,
Legion of Boom, right, they call
him? Selfish that, you know, he wants to smoke a little weed when they got a chance to win the Super Bowl and get caught. It's crazy.
Smoke weed
but,
every day.
Now, I have a take. With Pete
screen
Carroll being here, you guys, you remember, you know, all the stories that happened with USC and Pete Carroll, and did he know what was going on with Reggie Bush and the extra benefits and all
right.
the violations that they incurred? Then he left. Now he comes to Seattle, and since 2011, they lead the league in PED suspensions, and then you have this suspension, which is more of a drug substance abuse charge. So people are wondering, is this something about Pete Carroll where he kind of lax on the discipline, or players too free, or not enough things in place?
He's a quote unquote players coach, so you know.
Let me smoke with him.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so a question, and this is, you know, something we can go over real quick because we got some other people to talk about before we get out of here. But Brady over Manning again, last week's game.
Yeah.
I mean, at least this is how the general public puts it. Brady over Manning again. Why is this? Why is it that, you know, when these guys go head to head, you know, Brady just seems to lead his team to these wins, and not Peyton Manning?
Well, I mean, football is a complex game. They don't play one-on-one, so that kind of bothers me when
they
do that.
You.
Thank you. You know, and everybody who knows me knows that I'm a Denver Broncos fan. I've been for over 20 years at this point, but I'm not the biggest Peyton Manning fan, but he is my quarterback, so therefore I want to win every damn game. When you get a 24-0 lead, you shouldn't lose. Now, it's not just a defensive fault either, because the Patriots are probably the best team in football at making adjustments. But also, at the end of that first half, the biggest play of that entire game is when our cornerback got hurt, Dev's favorite old corner for the Eagles, Dominic Rogers-Cromartie. He has been playing lights-out football all season, and anybody watching the Broncos game knows, because the way our defense is structured, he's able to play man-to-man where he flourishes. Now, in Philadelphia, he had a couple bad seasons or bad games because he was playing zone, but when put in man-to-man, he's a quality corner. When he went out of that game, the complexion of the entire game changed. Because now the Patriots had longer drives. They kept picking up third downs. And, you know, kept Manning off the field. Manning doesn't play well in the cold. I mean, he gets colder as he's sitting on the sideline watching Brady have 12-play and 18-play drives. So just that one injury changed
the entire
thing.
With the salty look on his face.
And he's out there playing with gloves on. How can you play? There's no way you can throw the football with gloves the same way you throw without gloves. It's just not possible.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But listen, man. My opinion, and you already touched on it a little bit, I think the head-to-head quarterback matchup is one of the most overrated things in sports. I've never seen Brady nor Manning go out and play defense on the other corner, I mean quarterback, not even run up with your hands up counting one Mississippi, two Mississippi. That just is not the case. So if you want to say that somebody has Peyton Manning's number, at the very least, if you're going to say he's being dominated by somebody, give the credit to Bill Belichick or his defensive coordinators or something like that, because it does seem like in games where he plays against the Patriots, he doesn't have the same kind of success that he has on a week-in and week-out basis. But, people, it has nothing to do with Tom Brady, because Tom Brady is not out there calling the defense. Tom Brady isn't drawing up the defense, and Tom Brady isn't out there playing defense. So it really has nothing to do with what the other quarterback is doing. Head-to-head quarterback matchups are overrated because the playing field is never equal. Like, you hear Giants fans always running out there talking about Eli got Brady's number, this and that. Okay, Eli wasn't out there rushing the passer. Like, Eli's not a part of the NASCAR package. Like, he wasn't the one out there giving Brady fits. Now, on the other side of the ball, he was taking advantage of, you know, the Patriots' defense. But so let's stop with the whole comparing stats and comparing wins of quarterbacks head-to-head, because this is not basketball. This is not basketball. If you want to hype up LeBron versus Durant, you can do that, because after Durant makes a shot, he has to go guard LeBron, and vice versa. After LeBron makes a shot, he got to go guard Durant. So you can fully hype that up. And
to be honest with you, another thing is this. As great as my Broncos have looked at the beginning of the season, they have some obvious flaws in their team. You know, first of all, Von Miller is not back in his rare form, and that's because he was an idiot and got in trouble in the offseason as well as the beginning of the season. But then you have our situation at running back, which is dire. Our running back who's the most dependable is No. Sean Moreno, but he's not the running back with the most skills. Monty Ball can't hold on to the ball. He fumbles so much, and the other guy, Ronnie Hillman, fumbles more than him. So we have an issue with our running back who's
back
turning the ball over.
Should y'all bring
out Willis McGahee? No, not at all. He's done. But at the end of the day, man, it's like, yo, we have an issue right there at running back. And believe it or not, watching that game, we also missed Julius Thomas. Now, he's supposedly back this week, but he has been Peyton's, like, blanket in terms of a receiver, specifically on third down. If it's not Wes Welker, it's Julius Thomas. He's been having a great season. And missing, he definitely was missed that game because a couple of those drives, he could have took advantage of the matchup and, you know, stayed on the field, which would have slowed the Patriots down. And then, even with all that being said, Dev, it was a special teams play in overtime that lost the game. You know, word to Bill Parcells, people never think about special teams until it loses the game.
Well, let's do this, because we got to move on. We got 6 minutes to address what's probably the most dysfunctional team in the NFL, and I'll let Kill start with this. Because Akil used to live in the DMV area, so he knows, you know, a lot about the Washington football team. Yo, this team, you know, we've been hearing about them every week. We've been talking about it, discussing it, reporting on it, all kinds of stuff. But, you know, now Shanahan's job is in trouble after they got dominated on Monday night by San Francisco. So I want to know your thoughts on, will Shanahan be back next year? Because he's owed $7 million next year, so even if they fire him, they got to pay the dude. RG3, there's reports that he doesn't want his bad plays shown in team meetings, which is impossible for a football team when you're trying to, you know, when you're trying to improve. And then you have the people putting out videos showing that his teammates aren't helping him up after he gets hit. And then you have his dad in the locker room after the game consoling him. Kill, what's up with this team in Washington, man?
I mean, it almost could be a daytime soap opera, but first of all, RG3 needs to stop talking so much in the media and revolving things around I instead of we and team. Even way back to his surgery and him saying, like, I'm ready, but the coach don't want me to play. He's kind of opened himself up so much that now as everything is crashing down, like, everybody is just taking all kind of shots. He probably needs a media person. He probably needs a higher media person to help him in that regard. If I were Dan Snyder, I would keep all of them. I would keep RG3, obviously, because you traded away, like, 3 draft picks for him. I would keep Shanahan just so RG3 can still learn under the same system, but hopefully he doesn't get hurt this season and he can have a year of OTAs so he can grasp the offense and work on his accuracy. But he may fire Shanahan, but I think they should keep it together and hold pat.
See, You're right about that. And I think because there's people out there, even players in the league, just saying RG3 shouldn't be playing right now. I think RG3 definitely should be playing. I don't think they should be looking to replace him with Kirk Cousins or anything, because this is the guy you mortgaged your franchise on. You all drank the Kool-Aid on how well he played last year, but the offense was kind of watered down. So at this point, you most definitely keep him out there, because these are the growing pains that a young quarterback will have to go through. If he doesn't go through a year of this, then how will you expect him to be better next year? You know, if you try to hide him from, you know, the down parts of the game. So I definitely think he should be out there. The whole dad in the locker room thing, I don't think that would be a big deal, except for the fact that his dad was basically his PR person over the off season, and his dad was stirring up the pot saying, you know, they shouldn't have him running the ball this much. My son is a good pocket quarterback, and, you know, he should be able to play more in the pocket, this and that. So his dad kind of infused himself into the situation a la Wilma McNabb. So when he shows up in the locker room, it's just not going to get brushed off like anybody else shows up in the locker room without any kind of history of doing things publicly. And RG3 has actually defended his dad, telling people if they're going to start saying stuff about his dad, they better back up. I don't know who's afraid of that comment. But,
well, what?
Yeah.
What
and
do?
The thing about Shanahan, before I, you know, let Jimmy finish it up, I don't know. Even though there's no data to prove this, to prove that this is a good thing, but even though their win-loss record isn't what you would want it to be after Shanahan being there, you know, a certain number of years, I have seen stability. This franchise, you know, they get rid of coaches, they hire coaches, it's always a debacle, they spend a bunch of money. I've seen stability, you know, as far as, you know, they get draft picks, even though they gave up a bunch of them. They still draft well. They're not getting superstars, but they get enough people to help the team out. You know, it's just, it seems more stable as far as the business side of it, but they're not getting wins and losses, so how can you defend that? So I think they should let him coach one more year as well. But, Jim, what are your thoughts?
I think he should have been fired last year. He should have been fired the day he made Kyle Shanahan OC. I'm not a huge Mike Shanahan fan. You know, even though he did win two Super Bowls with my beloved Broncos, the years after Elway left, that soured me to this guy completely. And in terms of the whole RG3 thing, everything that's starting to come, it's one of those things where, like, you know, when it rains, it pours. You're starting to hear stories about how much of an a-hole he was in college and how arrogant he is, and it's just not good. Everything's coming out now. Because it's going bad, so when it rains, it pours, and
right.
It's just not good. When you look at the footage of his own teammates, like, leaving him on the ground, you know, that's embarrassing,
man. Yeah, that was crazy.
Man.
That was crazy, because in this league, in this quarterback-driven league, Jim, when your quarterback gets tapped and he falls to the ground, like, six dudes run over there pushing people out of the way just
man,
to pick the dude up off the ground like he's a little kid.
It's almost like he's lost his team, in a sense, like. And a part of it is his fault. When you watch him talk, he's always talking about himself. He never talks about the team.
And it's not just this week, though, because, you know, the footage of this goes back to the beginning of the season. They tallied up all the times he's been sacked and how many times he's been hit and how many times he's been helped up. But he's always been that way. He took all – like, I mean, he didn't go out and just take it for himself, but when the fans were giving him all the credit for what they did last season, he went up there and he – believed his press clippings, and he took that adulation in stride. You posing with pictures and the, you know, wedding gifts and all that kind of stuff.
Pop,
his teammates
Bob
might not like
pop.
Because those dudes are out on the front lines with you, and they're just as big as the reasons of the turnaround last season. But he gets all the credit, and people aren't going to like that. It's human nature. It's another one of those human nature things. All right,
yeah, man, it's unfortunate, man. RG3, man, you know, the only thing I can say about this is that, you know, you kind of have two ways you can go from this. You either get, you know, get better, or this is going to be the end of RG3 as we know it, man.
You know, McNabb is laughing at us. No, Donovan McNabb laughing at us.
All right, we got
to
get out of here.
Shout out to RG3 and his rap. His rap is trash. Anyway, man, thanks for joining us in the war room for another Thanksgiving Day special. Shout out to those in the chat room, those who hit us up on Facebook and Twitter during the show. All the calls have chimed in. We apologize for not being able to get to you. We had a lot to talk about this week. Listen, in between dessert, you guys called in, and we want to apologize, but now go back to getting desserts because we are getting out of here. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for another episode of your favorite show. We'll have a ton of conversations from all around sports. Enjoy the rest of your turkey day. The shopping craze starts tomorrow and also Cyber Monday. But remember, next Thursday, we'll be right back here. Catch us out, warroomsportstv.com. That's for our video content. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Pinterest, Instagram. We're all over the place. Until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity. Be steadfast in the war against ignorance. We shall see you chumps on top.
Tell them, say happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Peace.
We out.
Peace out.
Tune to Jimmy, know the blueprint.
Yo,
every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dev, PJ, B. Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. It's not down.
Call it
323, flipping 0012. They be going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, let's talk push. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secret, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode.
Woo!
2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us.
War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.